I think the thing that separates OmniFocus from all the other to-do list apps is the review function, which is part of the methodology, the weekly review. But also OmniFocus builds in the weekly review function into the app itself. Productivity has been this accelerant of my aliveness, where I never have to worry about ever missing a deadline for, like, as an adult.
You're listening to The Omni Show, where we connect with the amazing community surrounding the Omni Group's award-winning products. My name's Andrew J. Mason, and today we learn how Kehi uses OmniFocus. Welcome, everybody, to this episode of The Omni Show. My name is Andrew J. Mason, and it is our honor to be able to hang out with Kehi today. He's the founder of Latour AI Consultancy, a former Wall Street managing director, and a rare thinker who treats productivity not just as getting more done, but as designing that richer life. And he's the guy that probably would be teaching you how to simplify your tools, amplify that real impact in your life. And it's just such a treat to be able to talk to him today. Kehi, thank you so much for joining us.
Andrew, thanks for the kind intro, and it's great to be here.
Well, you have a really rich backstory, and I don't want to assume that people know exactly who you are, but how do you usually introduce yourself if you're on the stage at a TEDx, or if you're, you know, just talking to somebody and you meet a group of people and they don't happen to have a level setting idea for who you are and what you do? It's such a unique kind of life. What do you usually share with folks?
Oof. That's you start with the hard questions, but I normally say I'm Sarai and Amelie's dad and Lisa's husband, because those are my girls, and that is why I do any of this. So a father first. I probably will then say something along the lines that I surf a lot. I'm not a good surfer, but I surf a lot, and then I would say, you know, I've had a very interesting career. You know, depending on where the conversation goes, I might lean into what's exciting me now is kind of demystifying AI. But the decade prior to that, it was about what it means to lead a more productive, examined, and joyful life. And the chapter before that was, how do I make as much money as possible? So situationally dependent, but I think the thing that I try to communicate to people is that I am in the pursuit of aliveness, and not in, you know, jumping out of a plane type aliveness, but just, does this conversation light me up? Does this book light me up? Does this workout light me up? And that's kind of the North Star of my life these days.
I don't think you could have said it better. And I appreciate that you painted a little bit of that trajectory of those last, you know, 20, 30 years, in that for folks that really aspire to, you know, traditional productivity where it's like check as many boxes as I possibly can, there's a sense in which I feel like through your story, you've said, you know, I've kind of checked that box, but then also found myself looking around saying, okay, what, you know, what next? What happens next? And earlier on, I know you've mentioned using OmniFocus quite a bit, but how have things really shifted towards simplicity for you these days? How has that shift started to look for you?
We can go a little deep here. So I'll plant the seed and let you pull on the thread if you want. I think that my obsession with productivity stems from a fear of death. And like, this life is so short and I'm so scared of it ending, that what do I need to do to extract every ounce of it? And like, being wasteful with your time is a very sinful thing to do, or tragic thing to do if you're very scared of death. I don't really have that fear anymore. And I'm happy. We're probably going to need more than an hour to explain why I don't have that fear. But I would say that that fear motivated me for a large part of my life, childhood and adult. I would also say that, you know, I grew up lower middle class, which is fine. You know, there was always food on the table. My parents paid for my college education. You know, there was nothing material that we ever did not need, material food and shelter. But I always wanted a lot. You know, I wanted, you know, I'm going to date myself, but, you know, I wanted the nice pair of Air Jordans. You know, I wanted the starter jacket, the JanSport backpack and all that. You know, I'm a kid of the 90s. So, and I just couldn't my parents couldn't, they couldn't afford it, let's say. And so productivity was always this pathway to getting material things through basically the extraction of like money out of time, right? I mean, and I was quite young when I kind of put it all together. I was like, if I can be extremely efficient at things that are very monetarily, highly monetarily rewarded, I'll have everything I want. And I think that works, like that worked great. And, you know, as a teenager, I started to make a lot of money, like as an HTML, as a website developer. And as a college grad, I made a decent amount of money working on Wall Street. And kind of, you know, when I hit 35, I had done well, not nearly enough money to retire, but I'd done well where I could take a break. And I had just had a child. And so that led me to rethink the why of everything. And I think I would say productivity before age 35 was all about the how. And then productivity after the age of 35 is all about the why.
You know, it's interesting to hear, and I appreciate you mentioning the fruit because I do want to go deep, but maybe we'll give people a medium taste just so that we keep things wrapped in time. But I think about folks that when they hear what you had done in your life, you know, they're still kind of aspiring to what you were versus to where you find yourself currently at, and saying, you know, yeah, that's great, but I find myself drowning in tools, drowning in lists. You know, how would you coach somebody that maybe finds themselves in that aspirational space, but, you know, their life's overwhelming. They know they need to get back on track. What's a good maybe first starter step or two?
Productivity as a genre, and I know this of having spent a lot of time writing about it and using it, I think has a disassociative effect. So what do I mean by that? You might be feeling overwhelmed at work, and your overwhelm might actually be driven by the fact that you're insecure about something, right? Maybe you have imposter syndrome. But the way that it feels like you will tackle that overwhelm would be by adding more tools, like by better organizing your OmniFocus, or, you know, learning how to use Obsidian or whatever. And so the advice that I would give people is I am pro tool. I use a lot of, as someone who doesn't quote unquote really care about productivity at 46, like I use a lot of tools and I still use OmniFocus. But I would tell that person, like, are you using productivity and the learning of thereof as a form of escapism to avoid confronting the thing that you really don't want to confront? And I think that tools are great and systems are great. And I absolutely, they played a huge part of my professional success, which has led me to, you know, has been a pillar of my personal success and my personal happiness. I think the thing that I would tell people would be to always be careful that you're not using productivity as a form of escapism. And just like doom scrolling TikTok is, you know, an easy form of escapism, there's something about productivity where people are like, oh, that's not as bad. I think it's less bad than doom scrolling TikTok, but I think it's more in the bad category than the good category if your motivation is escapism.
For folks that are listening to this saying, you know, this is the Omni Show, you are supposed to be talking about being productive, and now you're actually just kind of like not discouraging me or anything, but really causing me to like look at some uncomfortable things here. What have you found as you've kind of looked in that direction?
I think that, so we talked about the fear of death. And so this kind of like, do I matter? You know, will people remember me? You know, type these questions. I think that if you have this question of like, did I matter in this life? Do I matter in this life? It's very easy to be like, well, I'm going to build a system to, you know, basically pour gasoline on my mattering, right? I think that would be one. But I'm speaking of it in a very kind of cynical way. And I also want to say that like productivity has been this, you know, accelerant of my aliveness, where I never have to worry about ever missing a deadline for like as an adult. Like I've never missed a deadline I'm 46 and a half years old, right? And, you know, you can use some funny examples. Like, I do a lot of I don't have cable, but I like sports. So I do a lot of trials where I'm like, sign up for a week at this discounted rate. And I'm like, the ultimate test of a productivity system is like, if you're comfortable signing up for free trials and canceling it before the event. I'm like, I've never once I did. I was quite angry at myself. And I called the company and I'm like, sorry, this was an honest mistake. Can you please refund me the $24? They said no. But besides that one time, I've done a very good job. So I never worry about things. I think that I get more done today in any given day than I would say 98.9% of my peers. I'm perceived by colleagues and friends as reliable. I'm a very, very intentional about maintaining relationships. We could talk about how I use OmniFocus to do that still. And so there's all these amazing things, but OmniFocus wasn't, being good at OmniFocus wasn't the end goal. Being a great friend was the end goal, or being a deeply curious person was the end goal. So if I'm worrying about, did I pay this bill on time, then I can't be creative. But once I stop worrying about, did I pay this bill on time? Did I send this email on time? Then I can be deeply creative. And so that was the end goal. And so it's really, I don't want the cynicism. I don't want people to take away that I'm a cynic of productivity. No way. I'm only cynical of productivity as a means of escapism. I'm very pro-productivity as a enhancer of your personal aliveness.
For the sake of practicality, you know, do you mind sharing just a few examples? You mentioned the trialing. How else does the software show up in your life, you know, just in the day-to-day to support whatever actions you're engaged in?
Yeah. So I could show, I'll pull up my phone. I can't show it, but just so I have... So if I go into OmniFocus, I have 8 projects. One is networking. The other one is AI networking, which is based like biz dev. I have something called personal. I have personal finance, and I have family, health, and birthdays. Those are my 8 categories. Right away, you can see that I'm using OmniFocus almost more like a CRM than a to-do list. Most of my tasks, if you go into personal, it's all like, pay this bill. It's mostly like pay this bill. And then I have, you know, like I'm on the ChatGPT $200 plan. And so I have like every, on the 14th of every month, do you still like ChatGPT Pro? ?
That's a great one.
Because it's $200.
That's right.
You know, cancel Chordify. I did a 1-year subscription to a piano chords app on Black Friday and I didn't want it to renew because I'm like, I'm probably not going to use this. Cancel Chordify by Thanksgiving, right? Black Friday, last Black Friday. So that's my personal, I have birthdays. Birthdays speak for themselves, but I try to wish everyone a happy birthday, people that I care about. Networking is pretty obvious. And then let's see, I think that's going. Personal finance and health. Health is like doctor's appointments for me and my family. That's how I use it. So we could talk about using it as networking and staying in touch with people, birthdays. One thing that's very important to me is that I use the review function. So on the app. So I think the thing that separates OmniFocus from all the other to-do list apps is the review function, which is part of the methodology, the weekly review, but also OmniFocus builds in the weekly review function into the app itself. And more specifically, what it does is every 7 days by default, it goes through your projects and it says, hey, you have to look at all of the contents of this project. Because remember, OmniFocus, one of the key facts is that it discourages you from using due dates, unless there is a significant consequence for missing the DUE date. So like paying your rent would have a due date, but like think about, you know, my family's values would not have a due date. And what happens in that system, which differentiates it from other productivity systems, is if you don't use a lot of due dates, then all of the tasks without due dates just kind of fall into the nether. And so they just literally disappear. You have no way of actually seeing them, which is why the review function comes in, which basically the app says like, here is your personal list. Do these tasks still matter? And you basically can clean them up or force yourself to do them. the ninja move is so we have this review function and it defaults to weekly. However, what I do is you can also set the frequency of the review date on the app. And so for something like my personal projects, I'll do it for a week. For, let's say if I had more personal development projects, I don't, but let's just say I did. Where it's like, think about your values, or have you signed up a new accountant, like things like that. Maybe I would set the review frequency of that as monthly, so that I'm not bombarded all the time with these review tasks, because those are tasks in and of themselves. So that's basically, in a nutshell, how I use OmniFocus today. So again, to recap, small number of projects. A lot of it is using it as a CRM. I use very few due dates, only for things that have a penalty if I miss them, like mostly paying bills. And then I use the review function and I customize the review frequency based on just anecdotal, like empirically, how regularly does that task need to be reviewed?
I'd love to shift gears a little bit into the realm of AI. You mentioned kind of starting some AI help and AI consulting just to kind of help people out, especially in the financial space. I've heard some fascinating conversations between you and some colleagues in AI. When you're using it as a creative partner or as a coach, and, you know, you kind of hear both sides of the coin, people warning of the potential dangers, you know, we're outsourcing our creativity. The same thing that's happened to social media for our attention span is going to be what's happening for AI and our creativity and our muscles there. What are some things that get you excited about AI that it empowers us to do, or maybe that it empowers us no longer to do as well? I've kind of heard you talk about the barrier of, you know, what's even considered work these days.
So there's this quote, I don't know who said it, probably like a Mark Twain or something, but it's about the relationship between money and happiness, especially when you start to make a lot of it. And the quote says, money makes you more of what you already are. So if you're a greedy person and you win the lottery, you're probably going to be even more greedy. If you are a very generous person and you win the lottery, you'll probably be even more generous. And so I think about this with AI. I think AI makes you more of what you already are. So if you're intellectually curious, you're going to be, I mean, you have literally every single Nobel Prize winner at your fingertips, right? If you are intellectually lazy, well, you're going to be like, I don't need to do this. I could get it 80% done like me with zero effort, right? If you are not a critical thinker, you're, you know, gullible, let's say. If you're naturally gullible, AI will make you more gullible. Like it will reinforce your gullible. And so I think that there are some extremely important ethical questions that we need to be asking about AI, about the environment, about the social safety net, about misinformation, about copyright law. I think there's really big important questions that I don't think we're doing a great job of answering today. However, I do have maybe like a slightly, I'm not a libertarian, but I do have like a little bit of a libertarian view on this, that like, if they are consenting adults, like give them the tool. And, you know, I do think like the market will correct for you. So if you're intellectually lazy and cheating your way through work with AI, like eventually the market will catch up to you. Right. And so in that regards, I'm very much of the kind of like consenting adults. Like, I don't love that you can gamble on everything, but you know what? Like, you're 18 years old. Like, it's not my, sure. It's not my job to tell you. When it comes to kids, I feel very differently about this. But that's a whole different conversation. So that's like the framework that I use on this, that like AI is really an accelerant. Right. And it's actually not that dissimilar from what I said about productivity, right? Like, if you're using productivity as escapism, like, I think you're harming yourself. If you're using productivity as a means to becoming a better parent, I think you're helping yourself tremendously. So I think there's actually a lot of parallels here. In terms of the things that excite me, it's like, I love learning. So I'll give you an example. So, you know, I've been using OmniFocus as a basically a reminders app to stay in touch with people. And I'm like, well, OmniFocus is not really the right place to do this, right? This is like contact management. So I built a web app from scratch. I don't know how to code.
Yep.
And it does exactly what I want it to do.
That's right.
And now I can share it with my friends. But guess what? As I started to build it, there's all these security questions that come up. Like, what if someone hacks your project? People are putting in their confidential information here. So then I had to go to AI and say, hey, I don't know anything about security of web apps. Give me the principles that I need to learn.
That's right.
And they gave me the principles. Then I'm like, okay, and like, I'm going to go try. I'm going to go plug this, you know, it's like, don't leave any API endpoints exposed, which, by the way, I didn't even know what that meant a week ago. And now I closed off all my API endpoints. It turns out I had one exposed API endpoint from testing. So I'm like, wait, how did I become a hobbyist software developer with a working web app that's solving a problem that I have and that other people have too? And I'm doing it in a pretty secure way.
That's crazy.
A $20 a month app? That's insane. And I want to be clear. I think that there are significant environmental concerns, significant IP control concerns, significant geopolitical concerns. And I think there's like significant like child safety concerns that I don't think are being addressed right now. So I don't want to just give this like blanket, it's great. I think it's, I rather live in a world with it than without, but I don't want to dismiss that. I think that we are failing ourselves as a society. And if anything, I've been thinking with my AI knowledge, like, I think like college needs to change and it's changing too slowly. Mm-hmm. So I've actually been thinking about starting AI high school, like an AI high school program for free that that you have to apply to. It's like a little AI academy for like high school kids. And the goal would not be for me to make money off of it. It would be because I want to do my part. I think our education system is failing kids with AI. And so how can I do my part using AI to make my dent in it? I'm never going to be an all policy person, politician type. That will never be me. But I do think that I have a lot of skills and knowledge to offer to folks. And as I get older, I'm like, yeah, I could teach another 46-year-old how to do this. And I'm doing this in my day job. But eventually that's going to be like, why teach a 46-year-old who will pay you a lot of money when you can teach an 18-year-old who you could fundamentally change the course of their lives?
Think a little bit about the next, if you could accelerate mentally 10 years from now and just kind of put yourself in that place and, you know, whatever that looks like. I'm sure there's unintended consequences, as you mentioned, and we're looking back saying, oh shoot, I wish we collectively, either personally or as a society or as a world, had done things differently. Do you have any practices or, you know, habits that you're putting in place today to kind of mitigate against some of whatever that regret might be?
Yeah. Are you asking about the regret in my own life or the regret in like society?
Let's say personal, because we'll keep it close to home for you.
Personal, I would say that I think that there is a pull to remove yourself from the physical world. And I think AI is going to accelerate that pull. I'm like, yeah, like there are times when I used to ask another person to help me with these questions. Now I just ask AI. And I think that it's wonderful. But then if you just stop asking other humans questions, I think that it leads to a suboptimal outcome for you and society. So I do fear that humanness can be, you can seem, I mean, we saw this with social media, where you can kind of replace, if it's on audio, I'm putting giant, you know, suggestive air quotes, you can replace human relationships with digital relationships. It's like, same thing, you know, money makes you more of what you already are. Like if you are good at maintaining relationships, digital relationships are going to just make you more prolific and more expansive. But if you struggled to meet people, you probably digital, not always the case, but it might bring you, isolate you more. right? And so I think, and I think about this, you know, I would like to say that the plasticity of my brain is pretty established at this point. But I think about it a lot with my kids. You know, I could be a little bit wrong, but some large percentage, I think it's like 30 or 40% of AI queries are some form of companionship.
Wow. Wow.
I do not want that life for my kids. And maybe that's me projecting what I want for me on them. But I'm going to use the parent card here and just objectively say, like, I don't think that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Just like if you told me 30% of their relationships would be people online, I would say, I'm not sure that's a good thing.
What collectively, it's such an open-ended question, feel free to take it any direction that you like. What have you learned over your years in helping people change?
My initial reaction was, you know, like teaching a man, you know, teaching a man to fish type thing. Like, you can only get people as far as they want to go. And I think that that's fine, but I think that's not particularly insightful. I would say, I think people, my wife really embodies this, so I'm learning from her. I think at the end of the day, people truly want to be seen. They want to be seen for who they are in their authentic selves. They want to be seen as not judged by their flaws or their perceived flaws or weaknesses. And they want to be just they want their existence. And that's like the things that they do and their character. They want it to be acknowledged. Doing that for other people is so much more powerful than any tactical thing that you could teach them. Now, when you do them together, it's amazing. But if you had to pick one, I think people don't appreciate how much the former matters.
I so appreciate your time with us. If folks are kind of interested in hanging out and seeing, you know, what your next chapter continues to look like, or hearing any words from you, you know, it takes different forms because I know there's different ways of expressing, you know, yourself and everything. But how would you like for folks to find out more about what you're up to?
Well, the archive of a lot of the things that I described is over at khee.com/blog. I've written, I think, over 400 pieces there. I don't write anymore on that topic. And then if you're interested in the new AI work, I have a newsletter called Future Proof Your Career with AI. You can link to that. It's on Substack. If you Google, you know, Khee Substack, it will pull it up.
Khee, this has been awesome. It could easily be a 3-hour conversation. I'm so grateful for your time with us. Thanks for hanging out.
Thanks, Andrew. Pleasure's mine.
Hey, and thank all of you for listening today, too. You can find us on Mastodon at The Omni Show at omnigroup.com. You can also find out everything that's happening with The Omni Group at omnigroup.com/blog.